from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Social distancing is taking a devastating toll on the arts in California. With venues closed and events canceled, artists are left with scant ways to make money while nonprofits that support the arts are pummeled by the changing economy. In this hour, we'll check in with artists and art institutions about what they are doing to survive and adapt to these tough times and what can be done to help. Join us after this news. Welcome to special coronavirus coverage from KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. Clubs and concert halls are closed. Galleries and museums, theaters. Across California, venues for the arts are shuttered, and artists who are used to finding creative ways to stay financially afloat are finding themselves with very few options. We're going to check in with artists and art institutions about how they're adapting to the shelter-in-place landscape and a brutal economy. Joining us first is Gabe Moline, senior editor for KQED Arts, and good morning, Gabe. Gabe will be with us shortly. Carolina Miranda is with us. She's a staff writer covering culture for the Los Angeles Times. Welcome, Carolina Miranda.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And I think we have Gabe Moline now. Gabe, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Michael. Thanks.
Hi. Yeah, glad to have you. I wanted to actually start with you because I want to get the picture here in the Bay Area first, if we could. Most performers work for themselves. A lot of them have no benefits, no sick leave, no safety net, really. It's been pretty difficult. First off, hats off to the coverage you've been doing with arts. I've been following most of it, and most of it is very good. But a lot of it is really very sad. You look at the pink section in the Chronicle Entertainment, and it's thinner than it's ever been.
Right. I mean, really, we are in an arts apocalypse. You know, everything is shut down. Every institution, even the large ones, have laid off workers. Artists have had their shows and plays and exhibitions canceled. The funding sources to keep them afloat are not really centralized. In the meantime, people's behaviors for consuming art are moving toward giant companies like Amazon and Netflix and away from local venues and theaters and movie houses. So am I worried? Yes. Is our coverage dire? Yes, because, you know, the situation is very dire.
And we'll get into what may be possible to do in the face of what you've just described as dire. But I'm just wondering, you know, how dire it is. It doesn't seem to be any safety net for so many of these artists. And most of them are relying on philanthropy. That's gone down. A lot of them, you know, are relying on places of business or nonprofits or galleries. So much is shut down that it's hurting terribly. And we just heard at least some rays of good news in the last hour about the possibility of the flattening of the curve, but this is going to have long, even if it ended, for example, if everybody were to go back to work tomorrow, this has some really dire effects still.
Yeah, you know, keep in mind a lot of artists and creative people are contractors or freelancers, so there isn't the safety net of health insurance or benefits. The financial solutions that have cropped up are all over the place. There's no single big fund or grant. It's a lot of small GoFundMes and other, you know, niche initiatives, especially at the beginning. That's what we saw. At KQED, Nastia Wojnarowska rounded up a lot of them. They're small, they're quick, they're nimble, they're specific, you know, like the San Francisco Queer Nightlife Fund or the Blues Foundation Fund, targeted to specific disciplines or genres. Bigger funds have started to emerge now. Sam Lefebvre at KQED reported that the city of San Francisco pledged $2.5 million specifically for artists and organizations. That's artists who can get up to $2,000. But the same week, he also reported a survey that projected a $73 million loss for arts groups in San Francisco alone. So these big funds are high profile, but they're only making a small dent. I know that tomorrow there's a massive national effort that's going to be announced involving some well-known funders with, let's just say, sizable grants for artists, no strings attached. But as with any fund, you have to know about them to apply. My wife, for example, got laid off from the indie movie theater that she helps manage. So she applied for a mutual aid fund specific to just movie theater employees, which would be worth $500. And someone in her company texted her about it. But what if they hadn't? So it's really dependent on who you know and how plugged in you are to get some of this relief.
Well, we should mention the California Arts Council is seeking ways to help artists, and there are GoFundMe projects of all kinds. $2 trillion essentially stimulus is earmarking $75 million from the National Endowment for the Arts and $75 million for the National Endowment of the Humanities and $50 million for the Institute of Museums and Library Services. But the real story here is an economic one, and it's one that's really troubling. And let me go to you, Carolina Miranda. Carolina Miranda is a staff writer who covers culture for the Los Angeles Times. And the last article I saw by you, you used the word apocalyptic too, but you said, let's talk about some good news first. And the good news has to do with a lot of the imaginative and creative things that have come out of this, particularly in terms of videography and putting things online.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, just to add quickly to the previous point, among the important funds that have been created, the J. Paul Getty Trust announced last week that it was creating a $10 million COVID relief fund for arts organizations around, that's for arts organizations around Los Angeles, but their CCF Fellowship for the Visual Arts, which they offer every couple of years, and those are sizable grants sometimes of, you know, $20,000, $25,000. They're going to turn that into emergency support grant for artists. So that way artists who have seen their income, this is for visual artists, have seen their income completely cut off, will have something that they can apply for and turn to. And we've been rounding up a lot of these grants and these relief funds on the LA Times websites for entertainment workers, for fine arts workers, for dancers. So we have a lot of that stuff online that you can go browse. I think to go
excuse
back-
me, Carolina, what I was getting at, though, was that there are a lot of imaginative and creative things coming out here. Now, some of it with streaming is very paltry in terms of the possible income that's coming through. But, you know, I was reading about Kenneth Turin, whom we've known for many years, a movie critic, got 14 movies that he's put online now while the pandemic is going on. Patti LuPone, you wrote about, who is doing essentially dispatches from her basement. I mean, people are coming up with stuff.
Yeah, no, there's a great Los Angeles avant-garde opera company called Opera Povera, and they have teamed up with CalArts and Chicago's Gray Center, and tonight they're staging a live stream opera by Pauline Oliveros based on a word score by Pauline Oliveros that is going to involve artists and performers from all over the world. And, you know, you're going to be able to go to your laptop and watch people do this collective work of art from wherever they happen to be. So I think, you know, the economic aspect of it has been catastrophic. The shutdown of institutions has been catastrophic, but I think artists are continuing to make art regardless.
Well, and that is the positive side of this and the side that we can be more sanguine about. But things are pretty bad economically, and the financial devastation, I'm thinking about not only down there in Southern California, but here in Northern California, and it includes all the workers and all the people who set up things for all kinds of performances. But you actually stretched a bit. You looked at New York, and you found it's the same thing really everywhere in the United States now in big cities.
Yeah, I mean, essentially everything is shut down. And I think we are facing an art world that is not going to be the same art world going into this than it will be emerging from this. You know, even after the lockdown orders are rescinded, we still face a universe in which large congregations of people are probably not going to be a good idea for the foreseeable future. And so art forms such as theater, dance, movie going in movie theaters is probably going to be a difficult thing to do, probably for months on end. I mean, we don't know exactly how this is going to play out scientifically and medically. One of the areas that will probably bounce back before other areas will be visual arts, simply because visitors to, say, a museum or gallery can be more easily controlled than pulling together an audience for a ballet. So some of what we've been seeing in China is museums reopening, but setting up reservation-only policies that limit the number of people that go into the building on an hourly basis. So people can still go and look at visual art and still have that experience. But, you know, there's probably not going to be gallery openings initially. You know, that idea of you all crowd into a gallery with your white wine to, like, toast the artist, that's probably off the table. So what we're going to see is institutions having to adapt to this new reality as we emerge from this. It's not like the lockdown order gets rescinded and then everything goes back to normal.
Well, everything is changing. In fact, Gabe Moline, let me go to you on this. The profit model now has gone, particularly for musicians, from selling records to touring, and that's going to be hurt in a bad way. That already has been hurt in a bad way. I think there was a feature, in fact, that Nastya did about a local artist named King Mott. He had all kinds of gigs lined up, and the gigs simply had to go off the record. Had to simply die. This is going to change just about every artistic institution that we're familiar with, isn't it?
Well, and it's nationwide. I'm thinking about the large festivals like Coachella and the Ultra Music Festival that have had to close down. I mean, Live Nation and Golden Voice, the two largest live music promoters in the country, have shut down all of their tours, which is, you know, just insane. As far as theater goes, you know, I'm thinking back to mid-March when I went to ACT and I saw this great play called Tony Stone, and it was about the first female black baseball player to play professional baseball. She lived in the Bay Area. On opening night, you know, it was just a magnificent play, and I walked out thinking, oh, I hope this doesn't get canceled. And sure enough, the next day, it got canceled. So what did ACT do? They recorded the play, they put it up online to watch on demand with pay-what-you-will tickets starting at $15. And I know Berklee Rep has done the same thing with a couple of their plays. SF Ballet is doing it with A Midsummer Night's Dream. This is very common now for organizations to keep certain productions alive and to have a smaller yet still constant stream of income coming in. And small musicians have done it, too, with live streams and virtual tip jars. So I'm thinking of the first big one I saw locally was a local musician named Avi Vinoker, who organized something called Pandemica Online, and it was a two-day festival with over 30 musicians performing in their houses with a link to tip them via their Venmo or PayPal handles. This is very common now. A lot of organizations are drawing upon their archives, too. I know the National Theater in the UK, the Metropolitan Opera in New York are broadcasting shows from the past. Locally, SF Jazz has been streaming a jazz concert every Friday for $5, and it has the virtual tip jar element. It's been very successful. They recently cut a $3,000 check to the jazz singer Liz Wright, based on tips that she got for a show that she did last September. So there are examples of it working fairly well.
And you mentioned the theater, and I mentioned Lily Janiak's article. She was talking about Theater Workers Relief Fund, about essentially doing streaming, and when you stream, you can make donations. All this boils down to revenue, but also she says, call officials and urge them to aid the arts. There's a lot of government relief potential here that one can at least hope for. And there's a reason also to let artists know that you appreciate their work in the wake of all of this. We're talking to Gabe Moline, senior editor for KQED Arts, and Carolina Miranda, staff writer who covers culture for the Los Angeles Times. And I'd like to hear from you. If you're a professional artist, musician, actor, theater director, what's been your experience during these tough times? You can give us a call and let us know what you're going through. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. That number again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. It's sad. I think about friends who were ready to do book launches, playwrights ready to put on a play and have an opening and so forth, and everything is pretty much shut down, and we'll hear from some of our listeners in terms of what they're going through. We're talking, just to remind you, with not only Gabe Moline, but Carolina Miranda. We want to talk with some artists, and I think, first of all, we have Bruce Crisp on the phone. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome, and let me tell people who you are. Bruce is principal trombonist. Glad to have you. Bruce is principal trombonist for the Marin, Santa Rosa, Oakland, and Vallejo Symphony Orchestras, as well as with the Sacramento Philharmonic and Opera, Fresno Philharmonic, and the Carmel Bach Festival, second trombone with the Opera San Jose. You are definitely about as itinerant a musician as we can find these days within the Bay Area. And this is a kind of freelancing that you do, and I know your wife is also a violinist, and she's been going through some symptoms. Is she okay, by the way? I wanted to check up on her.
Yeah, she is better, but she still has some lung issues, and she's going to be talking to a pulmonary doctor the end of the week on the phone.
Well, we wish her the best.
We both think we had the disease. She wasn't tested because, you know, no one's tested. But they tested her for 17 other diseases, and she came back negative on all of them, and several doctors have told us that she probably has it, and so therefore I had it as well.
Well, I wish you both the best, and I hope that you
Thanks.
Put it behind you. But I mentioned, and it's good to know that you've been struggling too, because your health insurance, you're talking about $1,100 a month in health insurance, and you've got no income.
Yeah, well, luckily we switched to Covered California because now that we have no income, we qualified for subsidies, and so it went down to $100 a month.
Well, that's a godsend, as
they
say.
Good.
Yeah.
But we're employees of all of these orchestras.
Yeah.
And we're not independent contractors for the most part. There are some independent contract work that there are some that we do, but for the most part, we're employees, but still there isn't really much of, we have no benefits, we have no health care provided by our employers.
And your audience, and this is true for a lot of the high arts, would often go under that bracket of high arts, your audience, your demographic is older for the most part, and the reality is that, you know, you're facing that as well.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a bunch of people that are the age of our audience that want to come and sit next to each other in a hall that seats 3,000 people or 500 people or whatever hall it is. It's hard to imagine that happening.
Well, it's also hard to imagine how many of artists like you and your wife are going to get through all this. I know you have one concert set in July. That's the Carmel Beach Festival, but the hope is here that that's not going to be canceled. Everything else has been canceled, huh?
Yeah, so far everything else we have has been canceled. And you guys have been saying, you know, it's across the country. It's across the world. It's the entire world. I mean, my wife had a festival in Germany that she was going to play for the month of May in Göttingen, the Göttingen Handel Festival, and that was canceled. That was about 7,000 euros worth of income gone. And, you know, the Carmel Bach Festival may still happen in July. We don't know, but it might.
Well, I'm sorry that you and your wife are going through this. Obviously, I wish you the best of luck and hope you soldier on. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us
you.
This morning.
Thank
that's
you.
That's again, Bruce Crisp, who joined us live from up in the North Bay. Let me go to some emails here and some comments. We've got our own Gabe Moline with us, as well as Carolina Miranda. And before we go to a break here, I'd like your response to some of the callers, some of the emails we're getting. Andy writes, can you comment on how artists and musicians pay taxes and pay in unemployment but can't receive unemployment because they're self-employed? Can you help us out there, Gabe?
That is really dependent on, you know, like Bruce said, he is an employee. Some employees are independent contractors, some are employees, some are just freelancers. So that does depend on each person's individual situation.
And I'm looking at a comment from Oren who says, the artists, yes, and the support staff, like the people that manage box offices and clean the theaters. And thank you for that, Oren. We can't, indeed, shouldn't forget, that's a large number of people to have to be factored in as well. Anne writes, I just finished watching an online British National Theatre production. They have all their filmed episodes online, one per week. They asked for donations, and I donated because I thought it was such a great idea, and I love their production. Maybe California artists could do something like that. Well, Carolina, they are doing something like that, aren't they?
They are. I know LA Opera has been putting performances online. The LA Chamber Orchestra the other day did an online only concert that they streamed and that our classical music critic Mark Swed reviewed. And you know, some of these organizations, they're setting them up like actual performances. You can view them online, but only at a set time. So everybody comes together at that time. The musicians in their various locations come together at that time, play the concert, and then when the concert is done, it's done. It's truly live entertainment. So they have found ways around this. But again, you know, these performances are reliant on donations and on the goodwill of the orchestra, and in no way to begin to make up for the income that musicians get you know, when they're playing festivals and when they're playing big professional gigs.
And let me bring some callers on. We're going to begin, Tom, with you from Mill Valley. Good morning. Join us, please.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having the show. It's very helpful. I'm a visual artist. I'm also an artist for Malt, and I also do Marinescape shows. And these shows have all been postponed or canceled. This is my only source of income. I rent in Mill Valley, which is extremely high. I'm represented by a gallery in Sonoma, a gallery in Burlingame, the Museum of Modern Art in San Francisco. They seem to be the only one that's open right now, but everyone else, all our shows are on hold. My only source of income is my art. I do some abstracts occasionally, but mainly I'm a plein air artist, and all my friends are pretty much in the same boat. We're not sure if we can get any help through unemployment. And the only way I'm able to pay a few bills are I have collectors. I've been in the area painting for almost 40 years now. So occasionally I get emails from my collectors and asking for paintings, but all my shows are on hold. And like I say, it's even hard to get art materials because we really can't leave. Luckily, I have a studio in my garden, so I'm able to work at home. But other than that, you know, we're all pretty much up in the air. Can't pay for rent, can't buy materials. You know, the shows, like I say, are all on hold. And we talk on a regular basis. I know quite a few artists in the Bay Area, and we're pretty much all worried.
You know, Tom, I'm sorry to hear your story, and your story, I'm afraid, is just a microcosm of so many other stories like yours. It prompts me to ask you, though, just are you thinking about looking for something other than your art that can at least sustain you and pay the bills?
Well, when you do something for over 40 years, you know, actually longer than that, it's hard to shift your gears into something else. I do teach. I do give workshops occasionally. But like I say, my collectors have been keeping me afloat, and hopefully they'll continue to do so. But, you know, I'm 66 years old. I can't start a new profession at my age.
Oh, well, I wish you the best of luck. And, Gabe, you're hearing a lot of stories like this, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm hearing some music in the background. I'm not sure what that, yeah. Well, we could mention we're going into a break, and the music we're hearing is from the Oakland Symphony with Bruce Crisp, who we just spoke with playing the trombone. We'll return. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about how artists and art institutions are coping during shelter-in-place with Gabe Moline, who is senior editor at KQED Arts, and Carolina Miranda, who is staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. Are you an artist or you work for an art institution? We want to know about your experience during these tough times. You can give us a call and join the program. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786, and you can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. And before we heard that wonderful symphonic music, Gabe, you were opining. I was asking you to opine about how common that story is that we heard from that caller from Mill Valley.
Yeah, you know, it is very common. And then there's one thing that he said really stuck out to me was, my collectors are helping keep me afloat. And that is representative of what I think is a social shift in thinking about donations, especially among younger people, where, you know, peer-to-peer donations, you know, these Venmo and Cash App donation models are really, really proliferating in this coronavirus crisis. And I do see the younger generation being a little maybe distrustful of donating to a large foundation or fund, you know, because some of it may go to overhead or a percentage may be taken out, or it may just take a long time to get that money into the hands of people who need it.
Well, I want to bring someone else on here to talk with us. Stacy Ade de Mangate is executive director of the Wilding Museum of Art and Nature in Solvang, California, in Santa Barbara County. And I know we're being heard in this hour in Santa Barbara. And Stacy, thank you for joining us. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting us to be here.
Well, I know in your case, this is terrible timing for everybody, but this is an anniversary year for you. So a lot has been sort of rejiggered to sort of cope with that or deal with that. But you've got a staff, you've got a half million, about six people, three full-time. You've got about right under a half million budget. How has this affected you, not only financially, but how has it affected you in terms of, well, I guess your whole mission, which has been tied in for many years, I know, to nature?
Yes, exactly. We do primarily exhibitions and programs that are all art-based, but all about nature. And as you pointed out, this is our special 20th anniversary year. And of course, the show that we were just about to open this week is going to open virtually in about another week or so. So basically, we've pivoted to going online as fast as we can. We are a very small staff, as you pointed out. So we don't have a big tech team. We don't have a lot of support staff. We're just doing the best we can to shift over to that and make sure people know we're still here doing whatever we can to get out the message about art and nature and how important that is to us, especially, I think, in times of stress.
But you have launched, I believe, a visual art experience. What are your hopes in terms of revenue coming in from that?
Well, right now, I wouldn't say it's really a revenue generator. We've moved our exhibitions online, all those that are currently open, you can visit online. It's more really just about keeping that awareness going and keeping our existing supporters and members engaged. We have noticed that some of our members are, even without prompting, going ahead and renewing, which is fantastic, but they need to be aware that we're actively doing as much as we can given the strange circumstances that we all find ourselves in.
But when you say doing as much as you can, a lot of the movement has to be and presently is toward more videography?
Well, we're going to be trying more videography. We've been doing more sort of galleries of images of the things we already have here on exhibition. So, again, we don't have a big tech team here, so a couple of us are going to be breaking out our phones and iPads and finding new software that we can edit the new video that we'll be taking. So that's where we're going to be moving more into in the next couple of weeks now that we have the basics kind of up and online.
Well, I hope you can open your doors soon, and I appreciate your being with us this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Stacy Ade de Mangate, Executive Director of the Wilding Museum of Art and Nature in Solvang, which is in Santa Barbara County. Let me go back to your phone calls. We do want to hear from many of you who are struggling with this or just have some thoughts about it. We'll go to John next. John, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
All right. Hey, I just wanted to offer a suggestion to other people. I still have my job because I can work remotely, but I'm also a performer. And what we have been doing, we have regular video chats using Zoom or whatever platform, and we are paying local artists $100 to $200 to perform at the beginning of each meeting for 5 to 10 minutes. So people who know artists and can arrange to have them come and perform right at the start of our video chat, because we have several meetings a week, and to help support them, we're offering them essentially a little stipend. So thinking other people could suggest that to their companies too if they're still able to work remotely.
All right, well, I thank you for that call and appreciate hearing from you. Let me hear from some more callers. I want to hear from as many of you as we can. Let me get to Joseph next. Joseph, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you for having me.
And you're in Fresno. I just want to let people know where you are. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm in Fresno, California, but I take my artwork up and down California. I'm a sweat painter. So what I actually ended up incorporating was sweat into my artwork, which allowed me to use fitness as a part of the way you make watercolor paintings. And in that process, I found that right now online is one of the only things we can turn to as an emerging artist.
Can you help me a little bit understand what your art is? I mean, I know a lot of artists sweat to get their work done, but how does sweat actually figure into the art itself?
Exactly. Well, the growth as an artist is learning how, even in times of tragedy, art's always meant to be uplifting. And so what I did was I found that when you work out over watercolor paper, your sweat lands, and it's fresh sweat. And then I take a powder pigment, and I powder the shape of sweat. So if you go to like Instagram, you can find what sweat painting looks like in action. And then that's a performance art. At the same time, I'm performing this feat of fitness.
That gives all new meaning to the, yeah, I don't know if you know the, I think it's Mark Twain or maybe been H.L. Mencken who said, you know, that art is about 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. But I wish you good luck, and I thank you for the call. We're going to hear from some more artists and certainly some more listeners. Dylan joins us next. Dylan is in Albany. Good morning, Dylan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me, and it's good to hear people talking about art. I'm a composer. I write music, opera, and it's insane having to deal with the fact that there's this indefinite postponement of all culture and performing arts in the world. We've talked a lot about the financial side of this, which is extremely important, but also for artists, we're used to leading a life that puts a search for meaning before our financial security. And so for me, the hardest thing is seeing all these projects that I've spent years and years working on that require support from institutions and that will eventually be performed in, you know, in live performance that involve lots and lots of people that are being put on hold. I've been working on an opera for 8 years with a large cultural institution in LA, and it was set to premiere in 2021, and now all those plans are on hold, and I don't know if it'll ever happen. And that's the sort of, it's not just the financial burden, which is hard, but there are lots of people trying to help with the finances, but it's that burden of spending your entire life focused on finding meaning in one way and then having that possibility ripped away from you. It's hard to bear.
It is hard to bear, and thank you for letting us know what you're going through, and I hope that you see the other side of it. Thank you, Dylan. I'm going to go to a question here, and let me go to you on this, Gabe. It's from a listener named Margaret who writes, "We're about to lose the beloved San Francisco Art Institute after 150 years. Can anything be done to save it?"
That is something that our reporter Sarah Hotchkiss has been reporting on, and she will have a large story most likely later this week about that. They've got a number of different solutions, if you could call them that, for their future. But they have suspended classes. They've notified staff and faculty that layoffs could be coming. It looks like effectively as a school, they are closing. It's 150 years old. They have incredible alumni. It's a really big blow.
Well, again, Gabe Melita, senior editor at KQED Arts. Let me bring in Amina El-Kabani, who is a photographer and who joins us now. I want to hear what she is up to. Amina, thank you for being part of our program this morning. Good morning. Amina El-Kabani, do we have? Oh, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, now I can. For a split moment or so, I couldn't. You're sort of editing photographs while you're sheltered? You're spending your time doing that now? Is that right?
Yes, exactly. So luckily, before the shelter-in-place order came into play, I had a bunch of back-to-back photo shoots lined up before all of this happened. So I've just been catching up on my editing, and I also have an Etsy shop that of photo prints and other like framed photos that I have been working on getting, you know, updated as well. And yeah, just kind of focusing on my personal projects, trying to stay balanced in all of the work that I'm doing.
I'm glad that you are
home for a long time.
No, I was just going to say, I'm glad you're using your time well, but there's no income coming in, is there?
No, there is not. Yeah.
I'm glad you're laughing. Yeah. No, it must be hard. It must be hard because You know, photography generally, I know you've worked a lot with concert events and things of that sort, so it's even more difficult for you to do, but photography itself has changed. The internet has changed it. It's a lot harder to make money. I hear this from photographer friends of mine all the time. And now, what are you doing in the wake of no income?
Right. You know, I'm trying to figure out all of these different funds that are available. I feel very strangely prepared for this kind of thing, actually, because, I mean, I didn't grow up very wealthy, and so I've always had to be creative in how I earn income. And so, you know, focusing on multiple streams of income has been really important for me, especially as a young entrepreneur. I'm going to be 25 this year, and I've been freelancing for over 6 years, I believe, on and off. And so, you know, I've just been trying to focus on changing my mindset on how I'm going to make money in the future. You know, so I also do a little bit of commercial modeling on the side, and I'm looking into now what it's going to look like to start licensing some of the images that I've taken in the past, either with gigs or of my own personal work. And let's see, what else? I feel like I really want to be sure that I'm not leaning too deeply into a scarcity mindset of, you know, having this moment be a moment that is not allowing me to make money in the way that I always have, but allowing it to be a moment to shift and, you know, just move with the times and accept that it is what it is and that I have to change.
Well, you sound
everybody else in the world right now.
If I may say so, you sound very positive and you sound energetic, and you've got certainly some gifts there as well as your creativity that can serve you well. Plus you're young.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I feel like it's just a time. It's time for change anyway. And, you know, just being in the right mindset to accept change as it comes, since that's pretty much the only thing we can depend on in this life, is that things will always change. Death, right?
Well, whatever changes come to you, we wish you the best of luck. That's Amina Kalabani, a photographer, and so good of you to join us. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go to some more callers here. We've got our two main guests for the hour with us, Carolina Miranda and Gabe Moline. And I want to read more of your emails, but let's first go to another caller, and that's Sandra. Sandra, join us.
Yes, hi. I'm an audience member in San Francisco, and I'm finding that myself and all my friends, we're turning to the arts in this time of isolation, and I'm so grateful to the arts organizations that are making the pivot, like Del Sol String Quartet are doing weekly Facebook Live concerts and weekly meditations, and the ACT is streaming some of their performances, and then ODC Dance Company had to cancel their big season and their gala, and they've been doing these amazing videos of dancers, and you know, all the museums putting out virtual shows, and there's so much that we can be doing as patrons of the arts and audience members to support, to make sure that we're helping keep the arts alive in the Bay Area. And I just want to do a sort of another shout out to KQED's, all the arts education resources that you have on your website, with kids being at home and parents looking for resources. The arts are a way to engage and nourish the spirit of the next generation. And so there's so many resources, you know, that KQED, the Spark segments, there's so much there that we have to take advantage of, because I'm very worried about the arts ecosystem, and I'm very grateful of the arts organizations and the artists that are stepping up to help us in this terrible time. So I'm calling for thanks, and to, as a sort of a plea for support for all these arts organizations who are really bringing us through this. Thank you for your thanks,
and thank you for again, reminding people how important it is to keep the arts alive. In fact, looking at an email here, let me go to you this, Carolina. Heather writes, I suspect if we had any other administration, we would have a Works Progress Administration initiated for artists and creators. California has resources. Why don't we initiate our own state WPA? What about something like that, Works Progress, which we think about in the Depression and so forth, to get artists out there and to help subsidize them?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we have, unfortunately, we have as a culture, and I say this nationally, not just California, have been consistently defunding the arts since the Reagan era. You know, if you think about the history of the NEA, and the NEA used to be an organization that supplied artist grants that ended with the culture wars of the 90s. And I feel like that has been whittled away, and it's why we're finding artists right now in a position of, you know, being in their 60s, having all of a sudden all of their revenue and streams cut off. Other countries have done a much better job. Germany has been really great at supporting freelancers and artists with individual grants straight from the government. So the question is, yes, that would be a great idea. Naturally, I imagine that, you know, one of the stories I've seen repeated ad nauseum is that California's $21 billion budget extra is now going to be decimated by this pandemic. And the question always comes as, do we as a culture see this as a valuable enough thing to collectively fund? You know, I do. I think, as some of the callers have said, what are people turning to in this quarantine by the arts? But, you know, will there be a political will to do it? You know, I don't know.
Well, the pandemic has also certainly helped many, I mean, hurt many people's pocketbooks, and the market has been hurt very badly. And that result of that is that a lot of those, and they tend to be in an older demographic, who support the arts are not necessarily as able. So a lot of this really has to be seen from an economic lens. But I'm also struck by just the creativity and the engineering, different kinds of engineering that's going into finding different ways for artists to express themselves. Let me bring some more callers on. We'll go to Nina in Oakland next. Nina, thank you for waiting. Join us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. My name is Nina Woodruff-Walker, and I'm calling from the Museum of Children Art. Some people in Oakland know us as MoCA. And I just wanted to talk with you about some of the things that we are doing. Of course, we're doing virtual art classes. We had our first virtual art camp where we provided programming to children. It was 4 hours a day with breaks and lunch and mindfulness activities and some dance lessons. But I wanted to talk about the fact that we are providing supplies to children in Oakland. We're doing an art kit drive. We're going to be delivering our first shipment on tomorrow to Horace Mann Elementary. And we want to thank the Banks Family Foundation for making that happen. We are just trying to be as creative as we can to keep our teaching artists working. We're also collaborating with other organizations like Attitude No Healing Connection, Vision Quilt, and Junior Center of Art and Science, to try and make this happen for our children who are amongst the most vulnerable communities and don't have access to either art instruction or the capability to purchase online lessons or the supplies to make sure that they can do artwork at home.
Yeah, well, I thank you for joining us and appreciate your call, Nina. There are certainly a lot of artists who are going online teaching different kinds of instruments and so forth. Here's a listener named Katie who writes, please acknowledge that you are addressing those privileged in the arts, those who have paid jobs, sometimes with benefits in the arts. That wasn't true of our couple of the artists we spoke to, but she goes on to say, please mention all the artists who get by only with their gig jobs, waiters, Lyft, Uber drivers, etc. These people have no income, no benefits, nothing. And Danny writes, just want to give a shout out to all the great blues and jazz musicians, clubs, festivals, and tours, which are all canceled indefinitely. Almost all of those musicians, such as myself, have no income now and for the uncertain future. Getting a lot of practice in, but this is serious. And we'll get to more of your calls here in just a moment. I wanted to, let me bring Rodney on. Rodney, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Of course. Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Yes, I was one of the actors who was actually cast in ACT's American Conservatory Theater's Tony Stone, and we had the unfortunate news of being closed the same day that we opened, which was sad, but I feel like it was an important time for the world, you know? I feel like, you know, everything stops. And sometimes I feel like it can be, oh, woe is me in this moment, but I feel like there's solidarity in knowing that all of us as a community have been halted. And to see there's so much light at the end of this tunnel because so many artists, art communities are coming together to build. And that's what I've been doing. I own a nonprofit theater company called the San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company. We're a small nonprofit who has a mission of having the artistic and theatrical perspective and voice of those who have not always been voiced here in the Bay Area, mainly marginalized voices, Black, Brown, queer, Latino, immigrant, Asian. But those people and those artists don't know about the resources. And I'm blessed because I have a community of people around me who absolutely know that there are resources available for artists who may be down on their luck right now. And we've been doing workshops. We've been discussing things. We've been making videos. We've been communicating with those folks to make sure that their voices are heard and that they're not down on their luck during this time, because they pay their bills from their artistic projects. And the majority of those projects have now been either postponed or canceled. So I wanted to come on and just voice that opinion and let you know that, you know, I was one of those people affected by those plays, but I am not hopeless. You know, I feel like our community is so strong. The San Francisco art scene is what made me who I am today. And I just want to keep fighting and let everyone know that if we come together and if we stay strong and if we stay positive and if we make sure we are in this together, we will see the light at the end of the tunnel.
That's a good, encouraging call, Rodney. Thank you for that. Good to hear from you. And let me read some more emails that are coming in. Nick writes, let me read Megan first. She says, I work in the performing arts as a technician, and I'm recently becoming more and more concerned about our industry coming back from this. It will take a long time for people to feel comfortable gathering in large grounds again, even when other industries are up and running. And Gregory says, it's hard for musicians to live stream performances if they themselves cannot gather. I hope we can allow small gatherings soon so that though we can't enjoy concerts as an audience, we can watch performers online. Both throwing attention, again, Gabe Moline, to the necessity to gather and the necessity to get together. And again, we're hoping we can get back to some normality soon enough. But it is going to change things. I mean, we were talking yesterday about how people probably aren't, guys aren't going to shake hands, and people of any gender aren't going to shake hands like they used to or hug like they used to.
It will change things. And live streaming is a stopgap. You know, live streaming is not a replacement for the real thing. But there has been sort of a thread over the last few callers and guests that people are getting creative, you know, not just artists. But if there's any silver lining, you see so many regular people getting back into painting or making short videos, learning a new skill like playing the guitar. And art and music used to be a big part of our domestic life. I was talking with a colleague, Chloe Veltman, about this yesterday. You know, the family gathering around the piano to sing the latest Harold Arlen sheet music, you know, as an obvious example. And it didn't matter if you were good. It wasn't for a career or social media clout. It was just fun to do and psychologically healthy. And I think a lot of people are rediscovering that in the same way that they're rediscovering baking sourdough or sending a letter in the mail. You know, collectively, we've lost that cultural knowledge, and it's inspiring to see it coming back in, you know, small pieces here and there.
I want to bring another caller aboard. Let's go next to you, Katie. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you. Under the circumstances?
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead. Please.
Yeah, I know. Well, for me, it's really brought me back to, I'm a filmmaker. I teach lecture and video at SFSU. And I started interviewing my grandmother over the phone and capturing the interviews on Zoom. And she told me about when she was quarantined with scarlet fever. And the interviews have been so captivating that I kind of went back to my roots, like the last speaker was saying, and have really enjoyed downloading archival footage and found footage from Prelingers.org and making little short films, which is what I went to school for to begin with. And I haven't made a short film like that in a long time.
So this has been a good productive shot in the arm from the sounds of it for you.
Huh? For me, it has. You know, I wanted to learn how to mix my own audio. I've been working on a podcast, and I thought the best way to do that was to go back to the drawing board. But my conversations with my grandmother, who's 98, have been so amazing. And by going through all these, you know, these clips and found footage from the archives, I've literally created 3 to 4 minute films that, you know, she's not in them, but it's of the 30s, the 40s, the 50s of retelling her experience, but through images captured and now that are archived on the internet.
Well, good luck with all of that. It sounds like a good creative spurt, and I wish you the best of luck. I'm going to go to a email here, and I'm going to go back to you, Carolina, if I may, Carolina Miranda, from the Los Angeles Times. Becca writes, even before the coronavirus, many arts organizations were closing because of Assembly Bill 5, which basically makes it impossible to be a freelancer, independent contractor, and in many cases a small business. Now any independent contractors and freelancers cannot apply for support. We really need to repeal AB 5. Well, at the risk of sounding too political here, if you want to weigh in, Carolina?
Well, I think AB 5 and unemployment are two different issues. I think AB 5 correctly has created a ton of problems for independent contractors, and especially for organizations such as small theaters, freelance photographers, independent musicians, about how often they can get hired. But the unemployment question is separate from that, in that, you know, we are a society that does not give unemployment to people who have not had a full or part-time job with a large organization. And so I think that aspect is probably the more critical piece to consider right now. I know that AB 5, when all of this started, that they were looking, I know that legislators were looking at some of the damage that it was wreaking on arts organizations. I don't know where that stands in the middle of this. I have a feeling that the California legislature probably has more important things on their plate right now. But the unemployment thing is separate, and it is critical. We live in a society in which people increasingly are independent contractors of all kinds, and they should be able to access benefits that they pay taxes into as well.
We will leave it there. Carolina Miranda, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And again, Carolina Miranda is a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. And thanks, Gabe Moline. Always good to have you aboard.
You too, Michael. Thanks a lot.
Gabe Molina, senior editor at KQED Arts. We're here with you, and we'll be back on the morrow. Stay tuned for more. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.